Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.
Celebrity Profile with Keanu Reeves and Gard Hollinger of Hooligans, the Arch Racing Project with Keanu Reeves and Gard Hollinger.
Your work in action, in the action world and John Wick and beyond, you've done a lot of riding. So does any of it translate? Have you done anything that's like close to racing?
It's such a collaborative art form, movie making. It's so collaborative and different artisans and different crafts bringing that together. So maybe seeing that, seeing film sets and films coming together and everyone working toward a common goal, that was very familiar.
Reeves had a motto ready to cheer on their team.
Every solution starts with a problem.
He's our cheerleader.
He's our cheer.
So how did you find, like, that became your role in this, for both of you?
What else could I do? It was a necessity. It wasn't out of necessity. It was just I wanted to contribute.
You would keep time. You would remind us about fuel.
And air.
And you were very interested in learning about data.
Ashley Dvorkin, Fox News.
From the trees over your head to the lawn you hate to mow and everything green in between, Garden Mama's here to help you keep on growing. Still the empress of everything green, here's your horticulture maven, Garden Mama Nellie Neal, on Super Talk Mississippi.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. Oh my goodness, what a beautiful day to be a gardener. Thank you so much for joining me here on the Garden Mama Show. I do have a couple of notes as we've already got texts coming in. I have to tell you, those night blooming cereals are absolutely serious. They are gorgeous. Thank you for sending that in. Your numbers outnumber mine, so just be aware of that. I'll be a little bit jealous all day today. Thank you for showing me. Another note today, many, many congratulations to SuperTalk and Palmer House and all of the SuperTalk family for such a fantastic fundraiser for Palmer House. I always look forward to, in my case, everybody has something they look forward to. In my case, I particularly look forward to Rhino shaving his beard, so I appreciate that.
He got the beard and the mullet hawk.
The whole thing. I mean, it's really something.
Yeah, they did a good job.
And, of course, that goes a long way because he has a lot of fans, too. He wouldn't want me to say that. He wouldn't like that idea. But it is very dramatic. It's a year's worth of hair gone.
I'm such a, I guess, obsessive compulsive, maybe, probably the right wording. No way I could not, like, trim a whisker. And then once you trim one, it's 100.
No, it's downhill.
Downhill. Then you've cheated, that. I couldn't pull that off.
I think the key is not looking in the mirror.
Yeah, I'd have to live out on the mountain somewhere and just take away all the scissors and clippers.
Because
I'm going to, if I see one that isn't going the wrong direction.
I love that. That's
mine
so
just
funny.
Don't grow together.
My dad was like that. He was very precise about all those things. So I understand what you're talking about.
Mine doesn't look precise, but if I didn't do anything, it would just grow like Brillo pads.
Well,
straight out.
I'll tell you the truth. Our friend Rhino really does have fantastic beard.
He
grows wonderful hairs.
He and Dave Hughes have the best. Like,
fabulous.
I ask
fabulous.
Dave all the time, like, man, you know,
how do
you get it to go? Like, he goes, oh, it takes a long time. You know, and I've tried. I've gotten it at least 6-7 inches. It's still, mine just goes, if I don't put a lot of wax in it and stuff, it's untamable.
It's like a lot of trouble.
It is, and it's not comfortable.
It's like, you know, I have hair from another century. I have really thin. I mean, the hairs are themselves are thin. I have a lot of hair, but the individual, so they don't take to a whole lot of style.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the best things anybody ever told me was, you're not ever going to use enough product to get your hair to look like you want it to, so you should just get over it.
Just get over it.
And there are a lot of things like that. You know, there really are. That brings me to this note that came to me last week. I guess it was during the show, but I wasn't looking at email. Of course, I was looking at texts and whatnot. Regarding your remarks about how this show should run, let me remind you just very politely, my name is on the show for a reason. And as long as my bosses don't complain, I'm a happy camper. Thank you so much for listening. I really appreciate it. Now, that'll get other people to listen. They'll want to know what it is I said that was so offensive. It was not offensive. None of it was. Trust me. Anyway, Oh, those beautiful Sirius. Walt in New Albany sent in a text basically before I had coffee today. So I'm happy to check into this, and I just really appreciate it. I may have to make a T-shirt for Garden Mommy. That's so cute. That's just adorable. Anyway, I love this. He has volunteer marigolds, or as he says, planted by God, and then he transplanted them and wants to know why they're not blooming. All right, first of all, it does take about 3 weeks extra when you transplant a volunteer like that, if it can survive. A lot of times they don't. So you've done well. These have made it. So I think it's just a matter of some fertilizer and making sure that you're not losing anything to spider mites. On a marigold leaf, it will just look like little white dots, the same way it looks on other plants, but it'll be a bit more dramatic because they're a big pest of marigold in the summer. But I don't think you did anything wrong. Little fertilizer maybe, but I wouldn't. This is a great time for growing marigolds for fall flower bouquets. You just have to maintain interest in the spider mites and not let them be a problem for you. The other thing is harder and not as comforting. What did you say last year about the black stems on crepe myrtles? I'm so sorry. Crepe myrtle bark scale is still a thing. And if you take those words, crepe, myrtle, bark, scale, you can tell that that's going to be a bit of a problem. And look up for controls, go to the Mississippi State website, MSU Cares, and there's a great article there, several different approaches to taking care of the problem. I'm going to tell you my approach to the problem. When the trunks themselves and the big stems are covered up in black. This is not the leaves. This is not even the flowers. Okay, those are different. That's probably aphids, and we can deal with that. But when the crepe myrtle bark scale gets into the trunk, it's not going to get better until you do something about it. So I have to say, unless it's a really prized tree of mine, I'm probably going to let it go and find a woodworker and make some beautiful bowls or something out of that gorgeous wood on the inside, and not have that pest in your house, or neither the pest nor the expense of trying to take care of the pest. So I hope you'll take a good read, find out what all these issues are, because it's a big problem, and if your trees are severely infested, I would suggest that you think twice before starting a program. Now, that's just not to say you can't do that, but you may find that you have to do it again and again, and that can get to be not only tiresome but expensive, and it does give us a little bit less beautiful tree to look at. So let me know how it goes. Check it all out. Good, good, good. I'm glad everything arrived. That's wonderful. Thank you for letting me know. John's in Florence. Oh, my goodness. Now, you know Mark Peaches Patrick. If you don't follow him on all the socials, you may not know that he posted this week a picture of a beautiful pawpaw tree, which I'm pretty sure is in Missouri. They grow a lot of them there, and it was a gorgeous tree with a big cluster of fruits on it. So John's neighbor in Florence has a fig tree with a pawpaw tree growing in the middle of it. This is tough stuff. Oh, it used to produce figs, but this year nothing. I'm wanting to cut the pawpaw down. She has two others. Could the pawpaw be hurting the fig? Well, the competition is not good for either one of them. There's only so much nutrient in that space, even if you're fertilizing the fig or if you're fertilizing the pawpaw. If she's got two other trees and they're doing well, I'm going to say you should favor the fig. Now, I would also say to be sure that you get yourself some cuttings from that fig. So I wouldn't do this particular bit of work until wintertime. Beautiful picture at supertalk.tv. Thank you, Lance. The pawpaw tree that I'm just so crazy over. These fruits are just beautiful. If you've never, we talked about this a little bit before, but if you've never eaten pawpaw and somebody offers it to you, I would have to say if you don't like smooth, sweet fruits, you probably aren't going to like it, but it's really delicious. It's custardy kind of. So that's nice. Really pretty. I would say that the pawpaw is probably, if it's getting bigger and the fig has stopped producing, I would say the pawpaw is winning and that is going to be a problem. So I would like for you to root some of the fig before you start chopping on the pawpaw, just in case the whole thing is. Sometimes roots are so entangled that either one of them being taken out can affect the whole situation. So I hope the tree is fairly young and small and can be easily removed before it has a chance to win. Wow. This is terrific. Look how fun. This is some yard art. This is fun. This is our correspondent yard art with a five bean soybean this morning. That's a pretty pod too. Looks really nice and very full. That's what you're always looking for. The okra leaves and this other correspondent. Oh, you remember the pretty little girl in the zinnias. This is that correspondent from last week. My okra leaves have a white film on some of the leaves. I don't have a picture. Is this powdery mildew and what can be done for it? Yes, it's probably powdery mildew. There's a lot of that. We had a wet, cool spring and it comes right on. But usually it will not be a big problem for you. I'm sorry, I meant to say wet, humid spring. That's what brings more of that. Isn't that a lovely zinnia? What a gorgeous butterfly. That's so pretty. Lovely, lovely. Y'all are really getting good at this taking pictures thing. Appreciate you sending them to us. That's gorgeous. There's some people will use a fungicide to take the powdery mildew off, and that can be very helpful. But it's also true that it will go away on its own in most cases. If, however, it gets so thick on there that the leaves start falling off of the okra, that's when you would want to use a fungicide, because it would mean that you're not getting rid of it as the leaves fall. Okay, it's not a big problem. It only becomes a problem when it causes the leaves to weaken and drop off the plant. So that's what you need to watch out for. A lot of people are growing okra this year, I'm happy to say. I'm going to invent something today. I have a little bit of okra, and I have some tomato and basil that I have already cooked into a solution. And I'm going to do something that involves, it won't quite be okra and tomatoes, but it won't quite be anything else either. I'll let you know how it goes. Oh, another picture at supertalk.tv that I did bring today. I'm just a real nut for prickly pear cactus. And this plant that I'm showing you, the one in bloom, is now in fruit. And I just love, love, love that. I want to talk to you today about solarization, and you will see that photo if you happen to join us at supertalk.tv, and I sure hope you do. There's the only thing better than solarization to get rid of weeds, either where you are growing things already or where you want to, really the only thing better than that would be solar panels that ran my air conditioner, because you know that would save me some money. Save all of us some money, as well as, frankly, put the sun to work. It's out here burning us up. We may as well put it to work for us. And this was all inspired this week. There are huge canals. If you've never driven through California, there are literally, you become, when you drive down the central part, the spine of the state, you realize how much of the water in Southern California is not in Southern California ordinarily. It comes down in these canals, okay? So I have to tell you, they've now started, because what happens, of course, is that then it gets hot and dry and the water evaporates and there's not enough water. That level of evaporation on that big of a space is tremendous. And they also have to have pumps to keep it going as it goes south anyway. So what they're doing, they're putting solar panels on top of them. Not only will it shade the water and slow the rate of evaporation, but it will also power the pumps. Now, if I think about that, why am I not running my air conditioner that way? Or at least my solar lights outside. I mean, it just makes sense. It just makes tremendous sense. I wish I knew what I was looking at. But y'all go to Supertalk TV. You'll enjoy it, too. It's a beautiful statue. That's lovely. Delightful. Speaking of California, we're in California today. This background is a photo by Michelle Fulton, my friend sent to me from Camp Bandito, California. That is not a place that actually exists all the time, but it is a camping area. And in this particular case, the campers, it's a reunion of West Coast artists that I'm lucky enough to know one of. So my friend Alan sent that to me, but Michelle took the photo, and it's just beautiful. It's a lovely, lovely glimmer, and we don't have that much till we have to go pretty far north in Mississippi to get a little bit of a rolling area. And in this case, of course, it rolls right down and then goes to the ocean. So it's a delightful place to have a camp out. It looks to me like they've been having a very, very good time. There are a lot of things going on, and solarization is one of them. I want to make sure that I don't give it short shrift today. You know, the whole origin of the word garden is in many ways similar to the origin of the word guard, or to enclose. And sometimes we have to really work hard to get the garden to work for us. But to lay out and cultivate a garden sometimes, well, always means selecting the plants that you want over the plants that you don't want in that space. So in many cases, solarization should be the very first thing you do. For example, if you've decided you're going to put in a garden, let's say next year, or you've decided you want to make a bed to plant tulips and daffodils in at the end of this year, people will tell you to start the soil prep, but they may not tell you to start the actual process of removing the weeds. So 6 mil clear plastic put over the space you're trying to clean up of weeds. It could be literally a piece of lawn that you've mowed down and scalped because you're looking to put there, that might be your best sun. So you're going to take a 3x8 stretch and make a flower bed. Or maybe you're going to do something a lot bigger and put in a couple of rows for a vegetable garden, several raised beds, something like that. What you need to do is make sure that the weeds aren't going to out-compete you in the same way that, unfortunately, the pawpaw tree is kind of out-competing the fig, it sounds like. The thing that I would recommend heartily is if you dig into that soil and you realize you've got roots either of the grass that's there or you've got a whole bunch of different kinds of weeds in there that have been coming up regularly over time, this is the time for solarization. And it is simply clear the area. You don't have to dig it all up. You just chop it down a little bit. Leave some green, but chop it down so that you can put the plastic tightly over it. Dig a trench around the area. Fill the whole thing, cover it up in 6 mil plastic, and then bury the edges or put bricks on them or whatever it's necessary to get it to stay in place. Look at it a few times a month to be sure that it's still tight, and also to be amazed at how it turns yellow so quickly and stays that way and then goes kind of tan, whatever the weeds and grass are that are in there. And in about 8 to 10 weeks, at the rate the sun is pelting us this year, you will be able to take that off, break those weeds out, and the next thing you know, you've got a new garden bed. This is the Garden Mama Show. We'll be right back.
Here's Sammy the Shovel here to tell you to call before you dig.
A lot of homeowners are working hard to create a loving home. Whether it's expanding that crowded deck, maybe a swimming pool, good times start with these additions. And that's why we respectfully ask you to first call 811 and have your utilities properly marked before you dig. It saves you from injury and expense. It's the law, and it's just the right thing to do. So call 811 before you dig. Remember us for your next project. Just call 811.
Are you thinking about retirement, or are you recently retired? Do you have a plan, or do you have a drawer full of statements? If your answer is the latter, then you're not retirement planning, you're retirement hoping. Risks and inflation are rising, and planning is critical now. At Element Wealth, our exclusive 360 process can create a strategy to help protect what you've worked so hard to build while still providing growth. To start the conversation, visit myelementwealth.com or call 601-957-6006. 601-957-6006.
I got butterflies, birds, and bees, and heck, I got a compost pile that's up to my neck. I planted strawberries, corn, okra, and beans. I've been working in the garden till I turn green.
Thank you so much, Eddie. Appreciate Eddie Rose, our own green man. You know what? Sometimes when you search for things, you find things you didn't know existed. There's a wonderful report today about the figuring out of Feynman's famous sprinkler mystery, which is to say, why does water blow out one direction? How does it work? How do sprinklers actually do this? What does volume of water have to do with it? There's all kind of questions in this that have been around for a long time. But they told me that the answer is silly sprinklers. And it's a term they put in quotation marks, so I figured it must refer to something else, right? So I started looking the other day, and I couldn't find anything that made any sense. Today I'm a little bit, now I'm ending up in the water gun department and pool toys. I think I'm getting closer to what I'm looking for, but I had no idea that there were dinosaurs that are sprinklers. I had no idea that there were fire hydrants that were actually sprinklers. I just didn't, you know, the things you learn. But anyway, this physics mystery is one of the things I find so amazing. We use things all the time in our lives, and we don't even think about how they work. But fortunately, somebody's been trying to figure this out. Whimsical silly sprinklers solved this particular puzzle, and it's fascinating stuff. The idea is that the rotation of both normal and reverse sprinklers, did you know there were reverse sprinklers? Of course there are. You've seen them. That's when that goes around and snaps and waters, and then it comes back and goes the other way. That's a reverse sprinkler. They're all driven by the momentum of flowing water, not how much is coming in, and not the other theories which had to do with the water volume. So I think that's pretty interesting stuff. You can bet there's going to be some new sprinklers that tell you they've solved the puzzle, because this is going to give them a couple of different opportunities to see something in a way they hadn't seen it before. That's pretty interesting stuff. But the search didn't turn up anything unfortunate, as we like to say. But it actually did turn up some things. I'm thinking maybe now I need new sprinklers. I don't know. Pretty cool. His lyric about butterflies, bees, and a compost pile up to your neck and all that stuff reminded me to tell you that today is moth day. Now, that's an oxymoron in itself, since we don't see them in the daytime. We see them at night almost always. Not all the time, but almost always. They prefer that particular time of the day. But I really do love all of these things. There's somebody out there actually celebrating. There's somebody having a moth festival. There's somebody out there collecting and, you know, pictures and jewelry that is Luna moths. Well, why not? I mean, they're absolutely gorgeous. But I'm interested for this particular discussion in the differences of between, of course, these babies and butterflies, because we always say butterflies, but we don't think about the pollination that goes on at night. White-flowered plants, plants with incredible amount levels of scent, those are all things that attract the moths. And so you will see them. For instance, if you grow anything with a nighttime smell, whether it's Nicotiana alata or even some of the jasmines will continue to be a little bit smelly after dark. Those are the things that we find so many of our beautiful moths, and some of the ones that are kind of plain-looking. They are the masters of deception for survival. For example, I love, you know, we have to remember that everything is a food source for something else, okay? And bats particularly like moths, because they're all out there at night. It makes sense. But tiger moths have evolved the ability to emit ultrasonic clicks so they can mess up the echolocation of the bats, or at least know where they are and get out of the way. I mean, come on, that's better than crows using tools, isn't it? It's a more sophisticated really response, I think. I remember being taught this, but I don't think I've ever talked about it here. The difference between moths and butterflies are not just day and night, although that's usually how we recognize that. But it's their antenna, which in the case of the moths tend to be fuzzier. I believe, nobody's told me this, I believe it's to pick up more signals because it's nighttime and they need more surfaces, just like the echolocation quality, to be able to do this. But it's also true that they rest with their wings flat most of the time. That's why when the Luna moth lands on your screen door, it's spread with its wings open, sound asleep, and absolutely beautiful. It's also why you barely see the tiny brown moth that causes us to have a few insect problems in our gardens, because they're not there very long, first of all, and when they lay under the leaf, they're flat. They don't cause any changes at all. Now, of course, butterflies tend to be more upright. They usually rest with their wings together, so that's one thing. And they tend to have, quite frankly, stubby, you know, not stubby necessarily, but more clubby type of antennas. Kind of fun. I think everybody, just like everybody picks out favorite butterflies, I think people should pick out a favorite moth.
Mine's the Mothman from Point Pleasant.
You like that?
Yeah, that's my guy. Can you imagine seeing a full-grown moth in a man format? I mean, that'd be kind of crazy, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I believe I've seen that before, but it was at a party. I think I won the costume contest. That was when
nice.
Yeah, I was Carmen Miranda that night. But anyway, I really love that there are yucca moths, which are fantastic because they're so different. Nature is fascinating for many reasons, but one of them is because for everything that there is, there's another exception. There's another thing. You know, it's everything is not just this or that. It's this or that or the other or this one over there. It's just like everything else. There's a myriad of responses to their lives and their evolution. In the kids' case, the female moth intentionally collects pollen and rolls it into a ball and packs it into the flower stigma to make sure that there will be seeds for the next generation to feed her babies. That's what the squash moth is trying to do to your squash plants when those egg clusters appear underneath and they're hidden. That's what she's trying to do. But in this case, this particular moth doesn't have to do anything except make their own place for the babies to be seeded from. So I think that's very cool. It's just another one of those crazy things that are so much fun. You know, so much fun to learn about, so much fun to do something about. Such pretty things. The ones we don't see in the daytime, you know, some of them are absolutely gorgeous. Their fuzzy bodies pick it up. They're not like bees, but in the same way of so many other pollinating insects, they pick it up and then they move it along. One of the most interesting things really about moths that we don't teach, it's the same thing as the way that you tell them from a butterfly, but it's also true that some of them store the energy from their caterpillar stage. They don't even have mouth parts. Okay? It's really interesting. They live on that. They live just a very short length of time. 10% of adult moths, including giant silk moths, which are really pretty, by the way, have no functioning mouth parts and no digestive system. They live on what they produced as caterpillars, and they literally are just the next thing for the next generation. It's interesting.
It's interesting.
I don't know that we, as human beings, we think we know everything, but there's so many things that impact the next generation that sometimes we don't think about. I'm pretty sure that this was how they figured this out, you know, was to say, well, look at that. That one doesn't have a mouth. My goodness. Must be a problem. Well, it's not. So, anyway, it's Moth Day, so enjoy that. I just think that's a real funny thing to me, the notion that we've got another opportunity to look at some of this crazy stuff, you know, another day.
They're not big talkers, is what you're saying.
That's right. And they don't have any digestive system, so they won't have to worry about the cyclosporium.
What, you know, would think, what's left after that? You don't really have to worry about talking. You're not eating. So you just kind of just being for a little bit of a time, right? I mean, there's not a whole lot of...
They only become moths, and then as they move about, they do contribute to pollination, of course, because that's pollen gets on their wings and whatnot.
That's their number one focus.
But the purpose of their species is to make the next generation. So they die after they mate because they've run out of energy. Anyway.
Hey, that's crazy.
That's crazy.
Mother Nature, though. You know, that's...
Jeff is killing me this morning on the text line, y'all. We had the tomatoes last week. You remember that I said I wanted all of them. Well, this week it's sunflowers. They're magnificent. And here comes the video, too. So we'll get that and be able to show that to you. Oh, Bill and Linda, these iris are magnificent. Look how beautiful. And I do love oleander. Do y'all love oleander? A lot of people don't grow it because all the parts are poisonous. And I realize if we have children or if we have compromised adults, we need to not have it around where it could be. Because it is attractive. That's, you know, the whole thing about it. But my goodness, that's so pretty. So gorgeous. I think that's the color that I want. But I got to say, what variety is this iris? That is magnificent. It's purple and white. And we're literally purple and white. I mean, it's really, really pretty. Thank you for sending that today. Look, just lovely. We have, when we do solarization, One of the reasons that we do this, of course, is because we would like there to be a little time at least after we plant the new bed that we don't have all the weeds in the world coming up. And it does last quite a good period of time. I'm not going to say it's forever, but it's once you've got those gone, they're gone. One of the things that I learned about a long time ago, and I have since seen the physical picture of, most big research horticulture facilities will have a department that just studies seeds and how they grow and what they do, and it has a lot to do with that particular environment and the land they're in and whatnot. But when they grow a carrot, for as long as the carrot can go in proper conditions and all that stuff, never pull it up, but basically take pictures of it after it's been there however long, 6 or 8 months, maybe 2 years in one case, the length to which the side shoots, the adventitious roots, come off that carrot is so impressive. And it is really one of those things that tells you how long we've been working with all of these beautiful plant materials and what it takes to create one that's going to keep our interest for any length of time. So I think that that's part of the fun of it, and also part of the mystery. So it's just like finding out that there's 10% of moths that have no mouth. It's not only interesting to talk about at the dinner table, but it does make your head scratch a little bit. You know, it makes you think, makes you go, well, let me see what else I can find out about this. And that's why plants are poisonous, like the oleander, is another one of those questions. They were obviously so prized by too many predators that the plant had to develop some defenses and continued to do that. And so obviously that's how come we have so much of it. I have a question. Lance, are you going to go see the Odyssey?
Well, yes, I have to. I mean, it's historical account, you know? I mean, but
it
no,
sounds
I'm,
like your kind of thing.
I'm a fan of the book, read it many times. So yeah.
Well, yeah, that's why I don't know if I want to see the movie.
Well,
I
have to do
book.
That. Yeah, I mean, I'm just going to have to try. Hopefully, was it Christopher Nolan? Hopefully
yes.
He got it right.
Yes.
You know? I mean, that's, I'm hoping for it.
I don't doubt his talents at all. I just, anytime we take a classic tome,
right,
I get nervous.
I'm worried.
Because I already know what I think.
Yeah, I'm worried that it's too this or that instead of sticking to the legend.
I think it's just grim is what Frodo, mm-hmm. whatever, but a magnificent movie.
I grew up, you know, with Harry Hamlin and you had the mechanical bird and all the different versions of the old mythology. So yeah, this would be a cool one to see. I hope, like I said, I hope they stick to
Ray Harryhausen.
To task. Yeah.
Yeah. Built that bird.
Red Sonja, you know, I mean, Arnold Schwarzenegger before they gave him lines.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, this is a step up in quality, I'm sure.
He was working every night, as so many people do, to try and make their English understandable.
Yes,
It's like thinking of dropping me in France. It would be a while before anybody wanted to listen to me.
I love that stuff when he had like three lines in the whole movie. And he had like Andre the Giant.
And couldn't understand what he was saying.
Princess Bride and stuff. So yeah, I love the fantasy slash history. You know, it's always fun to wonder if it all really happened or not.
Well, that's why things are a myth. But we do know that the myths that really get into our bones stay there.
Oh, yeah.
And the University of Barcelona has just revealed that a 1,600-year-old mummy discovered in Egypt has revealed that a piece of a fragment of Homer's Iliad was used during the embalming. Now, come on.
Oh, man.
Come on. This is great stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, I just love this. The papyrus that was used in the embalming process was identified as part of the famous catalog of ships, which is one of my favorite, one of the best known of the pieces of that ancient epic. But it's the first archaeological evidence of a Greek literary text being intentionally incorporated into the mummification process.
Man, that's some style there. Big Homer fan.
I guess. I don't know. But when I read that, I thought, this is where classic cartoon books come from. You know, this is the story you want somebody to tell, but you have to have a light heart about it. Anyway, on that note, we're going to step away. We'll be right back.
Hey, I ain't going to work on no railroad. I ain't going to work down on the farm. I'm going to lay around this shack till the mail train comes back. Then I'm going to roll in my sweet bed. Sweet baby song.
Thinking about that big home project? In Mississippi, the law requires a licensed contractor for residential projects, including new home construction over $50,000. Home remodeling or improvements, including roofing over $10,000. All subcontractors performing residential, electrical, plumbing, or HVAC work on new home construction projects over $50,000 or home improvement projects over $10,000. Don't risk your investment. Visit msboc.us to verify a contractor's license today. A message from the Mississippi State Board of Contractors.
Hi, I'm Brad Phillips from Yazoo City, Mississippi. I'm proud to be Mississippi's Catfish Farmer of the Year. Catfish farming takes a lot of hard work, but it's worth it to provide your family the best, freshest, healthiest fish available. When you buy U.S. catfish, you get that perfectly mild flavor every time, and you're supporting local jobs. Always look for the U.S. farm-raised catfish seal. Find recipes and restaurants at uscatfish.com.
All right, Mr. Morrison, thank you for bringing us in here today. You know what it's time to do, my friends, my dear gardeners? It is time to figure out where you're going to get your garlic and when you're going to plant it. And that's a really good thing to worry about right now, because you can take care of it and check it off your list. The thing about garlic is this. If you have a particular flavor of garlic that you like, if like me, you like a deeper flavor garlic, I like red garlics, purple garlics, that kind of stuff. If that's your flavor, you're going to have to really search for it if you try to buy it anywhere locally, because people, not that many people like that. If you're interested in hardneck or softneck particularly, you may or may not find that locally. If you buy garlic at the grocery store and plant it, it might grow. And sometimes it's great. Sometimes it's not. If you buy elephant garlic, you're going to have a very, very mild flavored garlic, but it's going to be lovely for a whole lot of different cooking things that people like to do. It's not that people don't like garlic, they just like a lighter flavor in it, a lighter taste. In areas of mild winters, as we certainly are here in the Deep South, the folks at Renee's Garden want you to know that it is you need to plant garlic and shallots in the fall, but at least the timing specifically goes to at least a month before you expect it any really, really, really cold weather. So that you put that on your calendar, you know, for the same time you're planting overwintering annuals, because you always want those pansies to get established. You always want the other flowers that you're starting in the fall for spring harvest, foxgloves and things like that. You really want them to be able to get established before the cold weather comes in on you. So we do that. But it's important to know that there's really two different kinds. This does not count shallots. There's probably four different kinds of shallots that I can think of right off the top of my head. But hardneck garlic, the big cloves grow in a single circle around a really woody stem, and those tend to be, quite frankly, a little bit really a lot more flavorful to me. But I hesitate to say that, because there are people who feel like anything that really tastes like garlic is too much garlic, but it's a strong garlic taste in most cases, and it's also something that I think you'll enjoy the looks of. It's a pretty plant, but it has a shorter storage than the softnecks. The softnecks are really layers of cloves. And you know the difference when you see them in a shop or where you buy your cloves. And they're going to be mild usually. And this is actually, if you see garlic braids, these are the ones that are in those braids. And they're very pretty. They're lovely. But it's just different. There's more cloves per head than in the hardnecks, and a more balanced flavor, a lot of people would say. So just think about that. I'm considering buying, I would have to decide to invest, but I'm thinking about buying a shallot from Renee's Garden this year that is really, looks, sounds lovely. I've grown several kinds, but this is a different one that I haven't heard of before. And so sometimes you just have to do that. You just have to take that chance and see if it will grow, and it sometimes it will. Speaking of that, I cut back the cherry tomato to two little clusters of leaves down at about a foot up off the ground, and that's all there was. And today it's at least 3 feet tall. That cherry tomato has responded tremendously. Yes, I do use some organic fertilizer on it at this point, and the nitrogen is what helps to produce that effect. Something that you probably, you may or may not want to know this, but in the world of all of our friends, this just sounds terrible, but today is a big nitrogen day. And that's one of those things that just sounds funny until you think about it. I hope it's not something that bothers you for me to talk about it. But there are a couple of things going on in the nitrogen world that people are very, very surprised about. One of the things is that the University of Leeds is working on this. I don't know if you are aware, you probably are, it's that Europe has been very hot this summer. And, in fact, there are no air conditioners left to sell. You have to order for next year if you're in the U.K. But what they have discovered is that that affects their plants, of course. You may remember, about 10 years ago, we started hearing the reports from southern England about their ability to grow wine grapes, which nobody thought was possible, but it turned out to be possible. And it's one of those things that has changed. So after deforestation, you know, you always got to keep realizing that when you cut trees down to build houses, or today is the day that we celebrate cars with wood on the outside. Those were called woody wagons. The surfer guys and all that, we celebrate that today. But you got it every time you cut the tree down. It turns out you got to do something about it. You got to replace it. You got to replant it. There's always another need for another tree. And what they have found out is in the forest regrowth across Central America, we've talked a lot of times here about the deforestation that has happened in many of the rainforests. The trees are harvested for good, but on the other hand, what happens next? And in this case, they have discovered that nitrogen plays the decisive role in how fast the trees return. Simple as that. Now, what does that tell us? Well, that tells us, it reaffirms actually for us, the notion that the organic gardeners used to put out, that all you needed was nitrogen, all you needed was compost, that's all there was. And that is true given perfect soil otherwise, because the thing you lose the most of is the nitrogen. But in this case, it tells you that the reverse is true. If we're trying to get things kicked off, we also need this nitrogen. Guess where else we need nitrogen? This is from Arizona State. Locust swarms really do a serious issue. I mean, it's a big deal. They threaten the food supplies. They threaten people's livelihoods. And it really is a big mess. What they've learned, they've been working with farmers in Senegal where there's a similar problem. Improving the soil health dramatically reduces the environmental damage the locusts can do. And it comes down to the nitrogen levels in the soil. I'm fascinated by this, because it affirms so many of the pieces of the puzzle that I have given to you all, which is it's essentially and only really in many cases that if you feed the soil first, the plants will be better able to take on whatever you do give them. If you give them fertilizer, if you give them water, if you just give them time, they're going to do better if the soil is healthy. And I'm happy when there's famous experts that prove me right. It's not that I made that up. I did learn about it, you know, early on in my career, but I learned about it in a more practical way over time, over growing, over gardening. And so I'm happy to tell you that when somebody goes out and proves me right, it's even more fun than when you prove me wrong. Speaking of invading critters like grasshoppers, Asian mantises, these are very pretty. I don't know how to tell you this, but they're threatening Europe's wildlife. This is a piece. They're really pretty, striking-looking Asian praying mantis species have rapidly increased because they are now in the temperatures they're capable of surviving over the winter. And that's, of course, one of the changes and things that we've just had to really pay attention to here lately. They're expanding northward. They prey on the native insects, the pollinators, and quite frankly, they also reduce the native mantis population because I think they eat them too. So it's not good. And then, of course, when they, just like any place, when a new species comes in and they begin to breed with the existing species, one of them suffers in its future profile. And in this case, the natives are not getting as good a break as the other folks. Just fascinating stuff. I'm always interested in what's going on in this world of ours, and I appreciate your texts and your calls to the Garden Mama Show. Keep them coming. We love you. You're the best. We'll be right back.
You know that propane keeps your home heated and your family safe during cold winter months. But did you know that versatile propane also heats water, cooks indoors and out, fuels on-road and off-road vehicles, powers grain dryers, and irrigation pumps? Find out what else propane can do for you by asking your customer service representative. Propane. Energy for everyone. For more information, visit propane.com.
We are advocacy, a century of wins, protecting private property rights, advancing technology, sustaining our land, conserving our natural resources, all to pass on to the next generation. We are the Mississippi Farm Bureau Federation, 100 years and counting. Become a member today at msfb.org.
At Fillmore, prices keep going up, but more could be free soon. According to Business Insider, Disney Plus is considering offering stream watchers a free tier. While nothing's been publicly announced, nor has a timeline been revealed, an employee says Disney Plus is facing competition from other streaming services that offer plenty to watch without asking for a dime, such as on YouTube and on the Fox-owned Tubi, which is free. Consumers in the past decade had flocked to streaming services to save money compared to traditional cable subscriptions, but services for which people have been accustomed to paying a little are now charging more. Netflix raised its prices this year, as did Apple TV Plus and Paramount Plus. And plus, there are upcharges for better video and sound quality or reduced or no commercials. Consumers have been looking to promos or to bundle deals with their internet and cellular providers to get discounts. With Fox on Tech, I'm Evan Brown, Fox News.
From the trees over your head to the lawn you hate to mow and everything green in between, Garden Mama's here to help you keep on growing. Still the empress of everything green, here's your horticulture maven, Garden Mama Nellie Neal, on Super Talk Mississippi.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. My goodness, what a beautiful day. Yeah, I know. It's hot. Okay, so what? It's summer. It's the Deep South. And I have to say, I wish I had written that book, What You Do When It Gets Too Hot. Okay, think of how many copies I could be selling in all of the Northern Europe and places all over. Put awnings on your house, learn how to close your blinds, you know, all the things that we just do by second nature, they've never done before. I was listening to someone from Denmark who said that ordinarily in the summertime, that's when they open up all the windows and try to get all the sunlight in because it's not that sunny of a place. This year, not so much. Not so much.
Maybe they don't know much about Mark Chestnut. You know, they should listen to him a little bit over there.
Maybe.
It's too hot to fish, too hot to...
All of that. Yeah. All of that.
Too hot to fish, too hot to golf, too cold at home. Yeah. The Europeans are learning.
They're figuring it out. And I will say that I do know a couple of folks who went to Italy recently because it's usually so pleasant in the summer. It's hotter there than it was in Houston, where they're from. Anyway.
Well, air conditioning sales for next season should go up. And by then, it'll be 82 all summer.
Best piece of advice that I know like a friend gave to a young man was, if you want a future that lets you travel anywhere, they used to say be a taxi cab driver. Mm. No. Now you need to be an HVAC person.
Yes.
If you know how to do HVAC, you can get a job anywhere.
You can. I mean, it's something that we talk about.
And
on
that's
the
hard.
Show. Yeah, the
you
show
know,
coming
I mean,
up. Is,
yeah, of course.
We,
handyman.
There was a great, I was watching a podcast the other day. The guy that did the Ford commercials was on with, I think, Sean Ryan, and they were talking about how many welders were needed just for the shipbuilding side of the needs that we have in this country. And
sure,
it was, the
sure.
number was astronomical. I mean, it's like if you're in that pool of folks and the way that you get paid is extremely well because you're in such high demand.
Mm-hmm, you know? Mm-hmm. And y'all listen to me now. When you have a choice, as I did, to take one of two classes as an extra, you know, little incentive to it to boost up myself, my career, don't pick the stained glass unless you know you're going to meet Andy Young and have a studio to work in, because I never had that. But I sure could have taken that welding class. I think I could still be, you know, pretty
yeah.
busy with that.
Well, stained glass is so beautiful.
Magnificent,
too.
Magnificent. But about a minute after I learned how to do just the very basics, very, very beginnings and basics, I started having children. You can't leave glass out, you know,
mm-hmm. yeah. well,
for the next 20
think
years.
It's you know, stained glass looks like candy.
And it's so gorgeous. I just, every time I see any pieces from Pearl River Glass, I just, you know, I just want to go stand under them and look at them, you know, beautiful things. Thank you, Andy, for all that. And he's a friend of the show, too, so that's terrific. Joe's in Madison. What is this on this sedum, and how do we treat it? Unfortunately, powdery mildew does take different forms on some different plants, and on a succulent plant like this one, where the humidity's been high and the conditions are close, I can see the plants are fairly well jammed in there, which is not usually a problem, but that's where powdery mildew has a chance to proliferate. So ordinarily people would tell you, just cut off all of the leaves that are damaged, don't put them in the compost pile, get rid of them, and kind of start the plant over again. But this is Autumn Joy sedum. It should really be growing beautifully now, and the new growth on it looks just fine. So this is where I'm going to tell you to use one of the home remedies that doesn't work for everything, but it will help to suppress the powdery mildew in this case and let the plants go on and go into their flowering cycle. Usually it's a tablespoon of baking soda and just a squirt or two of some kind of liquid soap, not an anti-greasing soap, but one that will actually help them to stick. That would be, if you bought it at the garden center, it would be spread or sticker, okay, because you put that in sprays of all sorts, really, to make sure that they can adhere to the leaf. And in this case, it's about a gallon of water for that one tablespoon of baking soda. Put it into a hand spray or spray the plants really, really well, and let's go ahead and see if that can just suppress what's there. I don't think your new leaves are going to get any of the damage simply because it doesn't work that way. But the powdery mildew is oftentimes, like if you see it on a crepe myrtle, it will be just a white crust on top of the leaf. It does get a little bit more three-dimensional on some plants, and that includes things like sedum that have very fleshy leaves. Yeah, there they are now. Yeah. We got a whole lot of that today. It is a thing. It is absolutely a thing. Let's see. Oh, now, James in Oxford, y'all are hurting me. I gotta tell you, y'all are hurting me. Spaghetti squash last night. Their spaghetti squash. This is just beautiful.
I'm sure that was delicious.
I have not. It's like, why do I not know this?
Mm.
The hardest part of spaghetti squash is scratching it all out and getting it out of the shell. You don't have to get it out of the shell, y'all. In Oxford, James is cooking it with just a beautiful, like a pasta sauce and ground beef and looks like a whole lot of fresh basil and stuff. Cheesies, of course, and it is lovely, but it's cooked. They scratched the squash out and then looks like they broiled it so that would be good and done and nice and juicy, and then filled it up and baked it. This is really cool. I'm going to have to figure out how to do this.
I've been watching so many videos on Instagram. What they do is just make you hungry all the time.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
It just drives me crazy. The meatloaf.
11 o'clock at night,
yeah,
I'm sitting there thinking, I should be cooking, you know.
What else can you stuff with ground beef? I'm learning.
There's many, many things. We went to a grocery store this week that we'd not been to before, and it has what I call 100 feet of hot bar, you know, like everything.
Wow, yeah.
Some of it cooked, some of it for you to cook, you know, all those kind of things. And what it was pretty amazing, but they didn't have this. They had stuffed peppers. They had stuffed squash. They had stuffed other stuff, but they didn't have this. So I'm going to come up with this one. That's terrific. Thanks for sending that to us.
When you go to the Valdez Market over here, you know, they've got the you've got the tacos, and then you've got a few other things, and then just unlimited amounts of different cuts of meat and seasonings and all these things. So you can take it home and pretty much get to work.
Yep, and that's right. Oh, yeah. And put it with other stuff.
Oh, well,
by itself, you got all of that.
They've got everything
so many
options right there for
so
you.
So many options. And it's a fun, it's really, I don't know, I know that after the pandemic, eating out became a big thing because people hadn't been able to eat out. Okay, we always react to whatever just happened by doing something different. And in this case, it was a good boom for the restaurant business. Not so much now. I think costs are high, and the last thing you want to do in most parts of the South is sit outside on the deck and eat or have drinks or do anything because it's just too hot this year. But I really do think that has encouraged us to learn how to do a few other things for ourselves. And, as you say, to watch other people's videos so we get real hungry and we can have a chance at that. And speaking of hungry, oh, my goodness, today is Sour Candy Day, but wait, it's also Caviar Day. I don't think we can put those together. I think we're going to have two different situations for that. But I thought that's so funny. Everybody knows some sour candy that they like. I mean, it may just be a lemon drop, or it may be one of those things with seven different names, you know, and stuff that are blue, crazy candies. But do we really need a Caviar Day? Aren't you going to eat some if you can, if you can afford it? I mean,
I don't know if I've ever even had caviar.
I'm sure you have. You've been at a wedding someplace or something.
Yeah, it's something I've never. It's like sardines. I mean, I've just, you know, I know about them, just haven't had them.
I ate sardines once. I've eaten caviar more than once. That's a different story altogether.
That's high society living there.
Well,
when
you have friends and you travel a bit, you get a chance to run into stuff. And that's why I say I'm sure it's been on a buffet somewhere that you've been. You've done all that stuff.
Natasha and Joel, the show that comes on before us, they were telling me yesterday they had Mario Andretti on today, which was very interesting, you know, because I was like, what's the connection? Well, apparently Natasha and Mario had grown up not far from each other in their home country.
Ah.
And so there was a connection. And, you know, as far as their, you know, geographic, and so it was interesting, but I said you need to parlay that into like a good Formula One the upper crust box seat, because the champagne and caviar in there would have to be just top notch.
Truly have
like
to
be. Yeah, that's a good idea.
Well, and wouldn't that's another situation where I don't necessarily care what they're eating, but I think that'd be a great table to be at, you know, and have a conversation.
Are you kidding me? Yeah, that would be amazing.
That would be fun.
You know, like go to one of the European Formula One
events. Yes. Yeah. And just, you know, sit up there and chat. That'd be fun.
That'd be a people-watching seminar.
Red in Ridgeland wants to know, how long should bananas stay on the stalk before cutting? I know they're tiny, but my daughter wants to see what a ripe, itty-bitty banana looks like. When it ripens, when you can see that it has, it takes quite a while. She's not going to like this. It's going to take a little while. But it takes weeks for them to ripen. Now, the truth is, once they get to full immature, that is to say full green, you can take them off just like they do when they harvest bananas and put them into a bag, a plastic bag with a cut apple. That's not how they do it. They flood the warehouse with ethylene. But we can produce enough ethylene for this many bananas in a bag, in a plastic bag with that hand on it. But it's a beautiful plant.
Beautiful, isn't it? And
my
question a question in addendum to his is, if they're the, you know, smaller bananas that do grow in this climate, will they be very banana-y flavoring? You know,
yes.
They will. Okay, they're just small. They're just
yes. And the problem is, we don't always have time for them to ripen completely on the plant, and that does enhance their flavor. See, when you love farmers markets, it doesn't matter where you go to the farmers market, and the farmers market in Hilo, Hawaii has like two or three people that have nothing but bananas, and be like seven different kinds of bananas on each table.
Well, I would be in love.
It was hard to get away from there. It really was because of that. And that's really where you find the ones that are little and blue, and they don't taste blue. They taste like bananas, but it's just a different, you know, there's just a lot of those. The Cavendish, which is the one that we see in the grocery stores, is the one that has been spread all around the world because it's the most reliable in the tropical zones for making a lot of, you know, you can farm them. Some of these others, you can't really farm them, and some of them don't ship at all. They, you know, they would be mush by the time they got to you. Or they don't ripen if you take them off the plant. The Cavendish, you can take them off the plant and ripen them basically in the hull of the ship on the way here, or in the airplane, or in the warehouse after they get here. So that's what we do with all of that. How gorgeous. This is fun. Yeah, it's true. Nathan's, he says every day about 10, every Saturday morning by 10, I'm starving because we just go on and on about this. But see, we want garlicky stuff, and he's with me. He wants it more because now we had that conversation today. It's true, though, if we're not thinking ahead, we may find ourselves quickly behind. So it's good to go ahead and think about that. Thanks, Nathan. I appreciate that. Oh, my goodness. Yes, it could be too wet. These are golden hollies. One of them's real brown. The other one's I would pull the pine straw away and see whether it's wet at the ground level. You know, like poke a trowel in there and make sure that you're getting water into them through that pine straw. And if it's super wet, that's the problem. On the other hand, if it's super dry, that could be the problem. So that's how I would diagnose it. The pine straw sometimes can actually get hold on to the water. And it doesn't, it looks nice on top, you know, but it doesn't actually let the water get to the plants. So but I hate that because that's a nice plant. Very nice plant. Well, I guess we know where all the Kansas City Chiefs stuff just came from. Thank you, Peaches. Oh, my goodness. When we travel, we do travel, don't we? That's fun.
Great question there about Zoysia. I would have the same question from, you know, where he's asking about the depth or the height in which you want to keep it cut for it to grow thickest. Beautiful yard. But
yeah, 4.5 inches is really too high for Zoysia. It's going to be thicker at about 2.5 inches.
Okay.
The only one I want to get as tall as 4 inches is St. Augustine, and that's because sometimes you just can't stop it.
What about Bermuda? Is it
Bermuda's much lower inch? Bermuda's inch. That's why those people are out there mowing those greens every day.
Yeah,
because you got to keep that Bermuda down
tight
and it really tight, and also to keep it green because as soon as it starts to actually grow over itself, it turns into seed pods. So Bermuda has to be kept, and it also makes a much better. Not just putting surface, but walking surface, too.
Question and addendum again is when you're in the growing phase of a new yard, like my Bermuda has, I've topped it pretty good. It's about 4 inches right now from, and I cut it a couple days ago. I still have seed in the ground from a second round to kind of go over some areas that the heavy rains just pushed it away.
Sure.
That's greening, and it's, you know, that stuff's kind of fuzzy up to about a quarter to a half inch. But the other is, you know, 4 to 6. I had to get in there and kind of trim it down. Will it be okay to leave it at that length, or do I need to go in and cut the Bermuda down to the, you know, to your...
The Bermuda will grow faster if it's shorter.
Okay. Even in the growing, this early phase.
I was going to say, but if it impinges on the stuff that's just coming up, you don't want to cut that yet.
Okay. So just kind of patience over the next week, you think? And then, because I do want to go in and cut it down. It's beautiful. The grass is grown in nice. I don't want it to brown. I don't want it to lay down, which some of it is trying to. Because, like you said, it needs to be tight, but I didn't want to disrupt or overcut it, and then the stuff seeding underneath and coming up, you know, get burned up or anything. Or I just was curious, so it would be okay to go in and cut the Bermuda lower, but be careful in the areas where I've added.
Just try not to, because what you'll do if something's only about a new seedling is only a half inch tall, and you cut it off, it may not be able to come back.
Okay.
That may be, you know, that may be considered weed control.
Gotcha. Thank you. I needed to hear that.
So be careful. I love this Zoysia, though, that we're looking at in the texts this morning. When you talk about wanting it to thicken up, you really do have to fertilize it, and I'm going to just go ahead and tell you, classic slow-release fertilizer on this lawn right now, cut it down to 2.5-3 inches, it'd look entirely different in a month. All right now, we got to get out of here, because there's a wing ding coming on, and we'll be right back.
It's just the dugout that my dad built.
I'm a U.S. catfish farmer. I work hard to make sure you get the best tasting, healthiest fish available every time you order U.S. catfish. The Catfish Trail features restaurants throughout the Southeast that support local catfish farmers and serve it up right. Grilled, fried, or blackened, po'boys, salads, or tacos. Every restaurant on the Catfish Trail has a dish worth stopping for. Find your new favorite restaurant at uscatfish.com.
Mississippi Land Bank is unique in the marketplace, and Bobby Spinks explains their patronage program is a prime example of how.
Our patronage dividend program sets us apart from any other financial institution in our area, and it's a way that we can give back. All of my customers are my owners, and that's unique and different. When we're successful, they're successful. We share those benefits with them.
For more information on Mississippi Land Bank's patronage program, visit mslandbank.com.
We've sent that Rip Van Winkle.
Come and listen in to the radio station where the mighty hosts of heaven sing. Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio on.
If you want to hear the songs of Zion coming from the land of endless spring, get in touch with God.
Get in touch with God.
Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio on.
And listen to the music in the air. Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio on.
Heaven's glory share. Heaven's glory share. Turn your lights down low.
Turn your lights down low.
And listen to the Master's radio. Get in touch with God.
Get in touch with God.
Thank you so much, John Hartford. Appreciate that. Well, I guess the wrong one. I thought that this pretty blue plant that's on the roadside in Missouri, good morning, Peaches, I thought it had to be bellflower because it's so tall. He says it's probably chicory. Well, it looks like chicory. It just looks tall. So anyway, it's a lovely plant. There's not enough blue in our landscapes. And I have to say that the chicory does close up at night. I know that because I've grown it before. But I don't know about the campanulas, the bellflowers. I don't know. It's a beautiful plant. I know it's not lobelia. So. Well, okay. I don't know how to answer this question, so I won't answer it in public, but I'll write you. Let me put it this way. If you are not able to do the mowing of the lawn at a lower height and it's also not thick enough, that's really all there is. I mean, it's somebody else's property, I get that, and it's But if they don't fertilize and they also want that zoysia to be 4 inches deep, it's going to be a conflict. So I appreciate your attitude of wanting to help them understand how to get a thicker lawn. On the other hand, if they like it the way it is, that's just kind of have to just leave it that way. It's the same problem with other grasses. But anyway. Now I will put my email address in here, and if you want to talk to me about it some more, I'll be happy to do that. I've had lots of clients in my life, and I disagreed with some of them, and generally speaking, I did what they asked me to. I think that is important, but I also realize that if my advice as a horticulturist is not going to be taken and something's wrong with what happens, the result, it's kind of a dilemma, isn't it?
So. I had that issue as a financial and wealth manager. Yeah, you give some great advice, and you knew it was right, and then you didn't have the same respect on the other side of your opinion, and you do what the client says, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you kind of have to. But
as long
if
as,
the
it,
results turn out
like
poorly,
as long as I've documented it,
Exactly.
I've got the email where I said we really need to cut this lower and fertilize it, you know. But anyway, and by the way. I didn't catch up with Scary Gary, but I will eventually when we talk about the next month. We're going to talk about winterizing and whatnot, as they call fall feeding. Anyway, there's a lot of things about our lawns that we can address in July, and we don't necessarily do that as much as we should, simply because we're busy. We got other stuff going on. The next thing you know, it's Halloween. I mean, it's just, I understand. I know how that goes, but it's also true that. If you'll pay attention now, you won't have to pay so much attention later. Same is true of roses. If people have not pruned their roses this summer, this is the time to do it to get the fall bloom back. If you've got, you know, if you've got roses that you grow for thick stems and big flowers, hybrid teas, for example, is usually what we do that with. But also Aloha and some of the other classics. We can make them have nice thick stems for the vase. But if we're not cutting them back in the middle of the summer, we won't get that fall bloom. So it's really important to understand that. I have to tell you, these are some of the prettiest speckled butter beans that I have seen, Florida speckles, and I love that one. That's one of those things where if people eat a lot of beans, they don't think about butter beans as being different from other beans, but they are. They have a little bit different texture and a little bit different growth habit, and because they bear mostly in the heat, they tend to have a richer flavor than some of the others that for example, black-eyed peas that we could have picked a month ago. So anyway, it's just an idea to think about it. But the plants are beautiful and the beans are lovely, and now we're all hungry. Nathan and I both want some butter beans now. Do blueberries have to be pruned? Yeah. I'd say I'm a random answer. There are people who don't ever prune them. I had a friend who insisted that she let hers get to be 15 feet tall because then the birds ate the ones on the top and she still had plenty to pick. Okay, that worked for her. I'm not going to say it won't. But they're trying to get some height on them. They're 5 years old and only 4 feet tall. So I would suggest, I'll tell you, Greg, this is the thing. This is not the point. We're too far past the harvesting to start pruning on them. And as you say, they've already put on some new growth. So why don't you give them some acid-forming fertilizer and help them grow into the fall? Just a little bit, not a whole dose, maybe about a half a dose. But if you do that now and then do it again in the springtime, you'll begin to help them put on some girth. And then right after you harvest next year, that's when you do the pruning that also helps them to have the whole summer to grow and get thicker. So both of those things work. 150-foot row of those butter beans will produce a gallon of shelled beans every week for 4 months. Now, come on. You know that's high quality.
Somebody's working.
That's wonderful. But it is one of the things about butter beans, is that because it's in the heat, they're set, they're going to go, and they can take it. So that's the other advantage of them. Let's see. We've got another question in here. We've got tall marigolds growing in our raised beds that are falling over. Can we prune them back now, and how much? Yeah, cut them down by half and put them in the vase. They'll be lovely. They just got a little thin-stemmed. That's why they're not standing up straight. But give yourself the opportunity to cut those, and the fall growth will come up and be bushier. I love that. All these cats. We got cats all over the place today.
They're guarding everything.
They're taking care of all of it. I mean, it's serious. That's wonderful. Okay, I know it's not blue lobelia because that doesn't bloom this early. All right, I'm going to go with chicory. Okay. I did mention the surf mobile, as we called them in the time. None of us had a surf mobile, but we thought everybody in California did, certainly in Florida. The wood on the side of the wagon. Sometimes the actual frame of the car was made out of wood. They were that old. The most famous one that people collect and that you if you can get this one for your movie, you're going to be paying a lot from the collector, the antiquer. But the 1940 is a fascinating thing. There's so much in the whole world of plants and associations with things. But of course, the idea was that the wood panel station wagon, because it was so different from everything else, really does. I mean, Surf City USA mentions it, the Beach Boys, Surfer Girl, all of those things. I guess that's why we all thought that it was a coastal find. But it's also true that people camped in them even before they had RVs or Airstreams or any of those other things. And they're pretty cool looking. They're, just hunky trucks with wood on the outside, sometimes on the inside, because it turned out that was a less expensive way to make some of those frames as strong as they needed to be. So it's another really fun part about our heritage as car owners. The 1940 Ford, though, is probably the one that has the most reputation. That's because it had a flathead V8 in it, and it didn't just haul surfboards. It hauled itself. See, now I did that so nice, didn't I? Anyway, I didn't say what I was thinking. I just controlled myself. But anyway, the ones that you see in the movies are pretty much a little bit later on, because they made them all the way into the into the early 60s anyway. I don't know if they made too many after that. But if they became, they rolled into the family things, like the Jeep Cherokee. You know, they were sort of, they had a little rugged reputation, but they also had a more sophisticated way of being at that time. So funny. I just love that. Oh, if you want to, if you got somebody that wants to be an entomologist, this would be a good time to start working at that. Entomology Today, the Entomological Society of America, is doing a focus this month on the ways that young interested entomologists can get to know old established entomologists. It's nothing like having a mentor. There's nothing like having a mentor when you go to learn something like that. So make sure that you give yourself the opportunity to consider that if you or somebody you know wants that particular joy to have. On the other hand, I don't know, Lance, today is toss away the could-haves and should-haves.
Yeah.
And focus on the minute, you know.
Mm-hmm. That's a good idea.
That's so hard.
Live with no regrets. It's always difficult.
Well,
could have done this and should have done that.
Yeah, and you can kind of, they talk about, you know, going down the rabbit hole when you get into something on the internet, and you look at that, and then you read the next thing, and then you read the next thing, and you look up, and it's 3 hours later, and you've still been doing this. I don't have that much patience usually, but a lot of people do. But I've got to say that it's a different, the could-haves and should-haves can take you down that same rabbit hole.
It's great to have a short memory.
Well, it's good to know what lessons you learned,
right.
Which is why you didn't and won't, you know, from the could-haves and should-haves, you didn't and you won't. Those are important to know, too. So I just think it's an interesting thing to observe as a day. It is true, though, that in psychology courses and, you know, things that you take about how humans think, even in philosophy, sometimes it's whether to reflect or not is a thing that each individual has to decide. But it's also a cultural thing. There are some cultures, of course, where we venerate our ancestors and believe that they're actually still talking to us, and sometimes they are. But there's also cultures where our eyes are always on the future. And it depends. You don't feel comfortable necessarily in both environments. I do think, though, it's important to have some of that. That, you know, the should-haves and the could-haves aren't what happened, but the don'ts and won'ts sometimes are what happened, and that was a good idea too. So I say be careful with that. Don't obsess.
Yeah, well, you know, you can, there's always an opportunity missed at times. You know, you see,
sure,
that in everything. And
sure. Well, and you'd have to learn those lessons. You have,
right,
to get that. Yes.
And to reflect on it as a lesson learned rather than something stupid that you've done. Always found, to me, as an ex-athlete or somebody that had to invest on a regular basis or what, you have to take risks. And a lot of times, if you don't, you're going to kick yourself for not taking them. And then,
of course,
if you take the risk and it doesn't work out, you're going to kick yourself for taking the risk. So you've got to.
But tomorrow's another day.
Exactly. That's when the short memory comes in handy, where you learn your lesson and you move
forward.
On.
Right. Mm-hmm. I believe that's very true. It's also true in writing. I can't tell you how many times, for folks who might not happen to know, I've written a dozen books, and all about gardening, and I've been asked many times, I want to be a writer. How do I become a writer? And my answer is usually kind of flippant. My answer is, I really don't know how to do anything else, so that's what I do. But I recognize that that's not entirely true, because I do radio and I do grow plants. I mean, you know, there's other things that I can do. But it's true that if you want to be a writer, just like if you want to be a sportsman of any sport at all, you got to just get out there and practice. And you may not be good at it right away. You may learn more than you expect to. So, you know, you have to just go do it. And in the case of writing, people will say, well, I'll write 500 words and then I don't like any of it, and so I tear it up and throw it away. Well, don't do that. You might come back and want to see why you didn't like it. Or, trust me, 6 months later, it may not look so bad.
Well, I think that's, you're talking about the Odyssey. I mean, a lot of histories were oral for so long. And once somebody finally wrote it down, I mean, you wonder how many drafts they went through and threw away before they actually were able to go, okay, I got it right this time. And how valuable would those notes be, the mistakes?
The drafts.
If we see those things today rather than just the finished and perfected product. Because nothing starts that way, does it?
I'm kind of crazy. I've always wondered if they actually just chipped off the one they didn't like
and
come back in with a new tablet. Right. You know what I mean? This is papyrus. This is pretty permanent stuff in many cases. And as a result, I've always kind of wondered. Now we know today, we've learned that some of it turns up in mummification practices because they use papyrus for that. So I guess they use whatever's laying around. But it may have also been that the person loved that part more than anything else. And so
he was a ship guy. He liked the boats. Yeah. He's like, I want to be wrapped up in the Homer boat stuff.
Just amazing. Crazy stuff, but fascinating to me. Oh, by the way, thanks, y'all, for the folks who got in touch and wanted to get a free look at the newsletter. I'm hoping now that y'all really like it and you come back around and subscribe for the second half of the year. This is the only time I do this, is the last 2 weeks of July. It's my birthday present to you for my birthday.
That is it. I love that.
I'm nice.
Well, I mean, it's such a great piece of information, and it's interactive, and that you've added to it over time, and it's accessible. I think everyone should have it. I get it for free, so folks. But
that's why he's being nice.
I really think everyone should get the Garden Mama's newsletter. It's amazing.
Thank you. Well, and at this point, I'm going to be showing the gnomes pretty soon, so that'll be fun. Anyway, we'll talk gnomes later.
Better have some names for those gnomes, and they better have like 8 syllables.
We do. They're very. Sir Brian May is one of them. Anyway, we need to step aside, take your gnomes, and we'll be right back.
In the summer, in the city, in the summer, in the city. Cool town, meeting in the city, dressed so fine and looking so pretty. Cool cat looking for a kitty, gonna look in every corner of the city. Till I'm wheezing like a bus stop, running up the stairs, gonna meet you on the rooftop. But tonight it's a different world. Go out and find a girl. Come on, and dance all night. Just like we need, it'll be alright. And babe, don't you know it's a pity the days can't be like the night.
Think of all the comforts your family enjoys around your home. When you include propane appliances throughout your home, you can have even greater comfort. From endless hot water to softer clothing and cozier heat on cold winter days. With an all-propane home, you'll also enjoy greater efficiency and energy savings compared to all-electric homes. Go to propane.com and ask, why propane? The answer will be clear. Propane, American energy. Propane, energy for everyone. Visit propane.com.
Are you thinking about retirement, or are you recently retired? Do you have a plan, or do you have a drawer full of statements? If your answer is the latter, then you're not retirement planning, you're retirement hoping. Risks and inflation are rising, and planning is critical now. At Element Wealth, our exclusive 360 process can create a strategy to help protect what you've worked so hard to build while still providing growth. To start the conversation, visit myelementwealth.com or call 601-957-6006. 601-957-6006.
Before
me and my old lady ain't been getting along. Things don't get better, I'll soon be long gone. This situation is driving me insane. Somebody fetch my coat and hat and hand me my walking cane.
If you don't happen to know that Elvin Bishop is one of the best gardeners in the world and has been for about 30 years, you may just like his music, and that's enough, too. But what a great dude. Yeah. Friend of our best friend, Charlie Musselwhite, does the wonderful music that they make together. But that's an oldie goldie from Elvin.
Isn't that a good one, too? Because, it's something that could be very depressing that he's singing about is sung about in such a way that it's almost like a relief and an upbeat mindset.
That's why in concert, everybody stands up and dances, even if they're very happy where they are and don't intend to put on any traveling shoes. It's still a great tune.
I may do that, kind of sing that song once the time it is to cut the tomatoes down.
Got to keep going. That's right. Got to keep going.
But, man, those things keep pumping them out. I've got more yellow flowers now. I didn't know if they were actually going to produce anything, but the last batch.
We shall see.
Been nice.
We're having a very fortuitous tomato year at your place.
Well, I've had a bunch of the blossom end rot to deal with, but the ones that have produced have been
persistence
delicious.
Persistence is a lot of it.
Yeah.
It really is. We've got a lovely photo here, and I do not know what weed this is, except to tell you that a weed is any plant growing where the gardener doesn't want it. So this is certainly qualifies. It looks like, I'll tell you the truth, it honestly looks like a whole bunch of seedlings from the Morning Glory family, but I don't actually know what it is. I will tell you that the way to get it out first is going to be to cut it down to the ground, and if it's in an area that you intend to plant later, this is the perfect example for solarization. Cut it down, leave a little bit of green there so that the sunlight can work on it, cover it up with 6 mil plastic, bury the ends of it and the edges so that it stays tight on this space. But otherwise, you can literally pull everything out and just basically plant something else, put 2 inches of mulch down to suppress it, and then deal with it as it comes up as individual plants. So I think either of those approaches could work for it. Yes, we are live today, I'm happy to say.
Yeah, well, I mean, we are always live other than July 4th.
Yeah,
I mean, every blue moon. But you do a great job of having someone like the Birdman fill in and do a great job whenever you need time off. So this baby here runs.
We have something very exciting coming up in the fall, and I'm not going to give it away, but I'm very happy to tell you that you're going to actually hear another voice here this morning, this year, one morning, to get along with Peaches. So that'll be fun. Let's see. Oh, Corinne's got Rose Rosette. Bummer. Seriously bummer. But the Proven Winners site has a pretty good article about Rose Rosette and a lot of different examples of what it looks like. I really appreciate that the first thing that they say in their article is, does your rose ever just look ... weird? And that's what this is. She keeps cutting off the deformed branch, and it grows back just like this. That's when you can say, yes, you probably have this problem. And it is not controllable. I mean, it's not curable, but it's controllable if you just keep cutting them off. It will probably take 5 years to kill the rose. So in that length of time, you have time to root another one or acquire another one in one way or another. But it's not something that we can cure, and it's not something that we can prevent. It just sometimes it happens. It's not always, but it has happened. This is great. The pumpkin has come up in the front yard. Fertilize it and water it, and you'll keep. Those are beautiful vines, just lovely. It has 6 foot runners. That's you so far ahead of people that are trying to grow a pumpkin. You have no idea. So that's wonderful. Just fertilize it and let her rip. That's going to be beautiful. I can't wait to see when the house grows its own decorations, because this is literally in right in front of the porch.
Yeah, I was wondering if there's and, decor or for eating.
Well, I think either way. Come on. I mean, that's gorgeous. That's lovely. I can't wait to see it when it produces. That's going to be fun. Lots and lots of fun. somebody sent me, that knows me, sent me a text and says, why do you always say these things are fun? Because they are. This is growing plants, having horticulture in your life, being a gardener, talking about things that are growing, wondering why some things won't. You know, all of these bits and pieces of things are really all about what's going on around you. And it keeps you planted, literally. But it also is, honestly, I just was listening to a song last night. I'm looking for good, clean fun. Here it is. This is good, clean fun. Yeah, so just fertilize them and protect the pumpkins. And if it doesn't rain, you'll need to water them to keep them growing. So that's lovely. That's really wonderful. What fun. Terrific. Today is my day. I don't declare days that often. But because I'm talking about solarization and because I'm talking about so many other things like that, this is really and truly hardcore horticulture day. And in that sense, the thing that we talk about just like there's extreme sports, well, there's extreme gardening. And you may have seen it in your own neighborhood when people plant potholes. That's considered one kind, because you're not like building a flower bed in there. You're planting some things that might survive in whatever's in there and throwing in a little bit of help for them, but not too much. It's extreme horticulture, extreme practices like that, growing things in gravel. If you've ever seen they're probably one of the second or third horticulture viral video was the lady who, what, you walk into her courtyard and it's all covered up green. And when she picks up the edges of the plants, of course, they're all seeded in the cracks between the pavers. And they grow from there. That's all they, that's all the soil that they have. All right. So that's that kind of stuff. We might go do rubble gardening. I first ran into rubble gardening when there were some folks trying to put old retired warehouses into practice for urban gardening sites. But up on the top of those roofs was pretty harsh environment, and sometimes it was actually polluted. So there were things that they would bring in and just bake, put boxes together to use the space, and then use whatever rubble was in the place to plant in, because you can't put a whole lot more weight up on a roof. But there was the weight was already there, so you knew it wasn't going to collapse it. So that's how you do rooftop and rubble gardening. The other thing is that if you think solarization sounds like a real stupid idea, but you like my approach of doing things that are sustainable and that come from natural sources, I have to tell you that a propane weeder, yeah, that's right, weeding with fire is amazing. Got to be real careful. Don't let somebody, as I frequently say, children and compromised adults do not need to be fooling with this. Okay? But there's also another piece of extreme horticulture, or hardcore horticulture as we call it, that has to do with the whole business of plants responding to sound. So people will play different kinds of music in their gardens and take notes about what grows and what doesn't. I think that's fascinating.
That's the crop circles.
All could be. Yeah,
I think they use sound for that.
There are some theories that is simply done by sound wave, yes. I wish I knew if it was true. I had another text from somebody. Where are you sitting today? It's at supertalk.tv. I'm sitting at Camp Bandito in California, thanks to a photograph taken by Michelle Fulton at their reunion this weekend. So it's a beautiful shot, just lovely.
One day we'll be gardening on Mars, and we'll have you in front of that.
Well, we hope so. Yeah. We hope so. I did think about, since Matt Damon's getting so much attention, I did think about that, where he's growing the potatoes, you know.
Oh, yeah. Good stuff.
We could put me in the spaceship. Anyway, thank you all so very, very much. Take care of yourselves. Give yourselves permission to listen. Be nice. See you next week.
Mississippi Media. Download past episodes at supertalk.fm and contact Garden Mama anytime at mamaonair@yahoo.com. Thanks for choosing the Garden Mama Show.
Running a business is tough. If you're struggling with HR, benefits, and payroll, you're not alone. Many businesses just don't have the resources to keep up. That's where MWG Employer Services comes in. We provide a full range of employer services with everything from payroll to benefits to HR services and compliance, and can create a custom plan that fits your needs and budget. We're a Mississippi-based company that can help you focus on what you do best, growing your business. Call MWG Employer Services today at 601-206-7966 or go to MWG Employer Services.
Ever imagine one company could transform how you live and work? With CSpire, you're connected with advanced technology that enhances everything you do. How you order your morning coffee.
Order my usual.
How you secure your company's data. Even how you turn your backyard into your personal movie theater.
Start movie night.
Own your day on the network for connected living. There's more to see. CSpire. Customer inspired.
If you're ever
A Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.